It is Friday, January 12th, 2024, and we are at war. The United States and the United Kingdom have joined together to launch a massive bombing raid and airstrikes against the Houthis in Yemen, who have been, of course, attacking certain cargo vessels destined for Israel as a way to attempt to convince Israel to stop carrying out acts of genocide against the Palestinians in Gaza. And late last night, the U.S. and U.K. launched these attacks against the Houthi forces, with fake President Joe Biden announcing that, along with the United Kingdom and with support from Australia, Bahrain, Canada, and the Netherlands, successfully struck a number of targets in Yemen that Houthi rebels have been using to threaten freedom of navigation in one of the world's most critical waterways of peace. I mean, it's a joke for the United States to talk about freedom of navigation or peace at all. I mean, what a joke. When the U.S. uses coercion and violence and economic sanctions and attacking civilian targets and starving people to death because of destruction of infrastructure, to talk about freedom of navigation, the U.S. has no moral standing whatsoever in such affairs. But nevertheless, we are at war. And of course, Biden and the Pentagon bypassed Congress. They didn't even bother to get permission from Congress or to brief Congress. You know, only Congress can declare war, but hey, this regime doesn't bother with anything related to the Constitution or the separation of powers. They're just saying, well, we want to start bombing, we're going to start bombing. And what good is it going to do, by the way? The leader of the Houthi rebels, whose name is Al-Houthi, I mean, literally, that's his name, he says, quote, "We Yemenis are not those who are afraid of America. We are comfortable with direct confrontation with the Americans." Well, yeah, because the Houthis have very long-range ballistic missiles. I mean, well, perhaps not very long-range, but they could reach, well, they can reach Israel, for example. They can reach, you know, anywhere in the Red Sea. They can reach the Persian Gulf. They can reach most places in the Arabian Sea. I mean, Yemen can reach the oil fields in Saudi Arabia. And by the way, the Saudis have been bombing Yemen for years. So there's some new bombs dropped on Yemen. I feel like this is just more theater from the United States to try to show the world that the U.S. is doing something, you know? When somebody's screaming, "Do something! Do something! The ships are getting attacked! Do something!" So they're just dropping bombs, you know, probably on the deserts of Yemen, to say that they're doing something. And they say they're hitting some infrastructure and some radar sites. So what? The Houthis are just going to rebuild that. They probably have the rebuild kits ready to go. They're just going to roll them out tomorrow and have a few bolts and ratchets, clickety-clack, clickety-clack. Our radar is back. And it's not going to stop them. Meanwhile, the U.S. Navy ships are using up all their ammunition, like their Tomahawk cruise missiles. They're using it up. Which means what Yemen is doing here is actually quite brilliant. They are depleting the munitions of the United States Navy. And when those munitions are depleted, well, the naval vessels have to leave. They have to go sail back somewhere else and reload, which takes, you know, a week or more. And in that time, well, the U.S. Navy can't protect Israel, can they? And Israel is, of course, the root of all of this. And by the way, speaking of Israel, big news yesterday at the International Court of Justice, the ICJ. Two attorneys from South Africa laid out the case of Israeli genocide against the Palestinians. And I'm going to play some clips from both of those speeches. And I'm also cross-posting those videos to my channel on brighteon.com. Most of the mainstream media is completely ignoring this, even though the evidence laid out is absolutely damning. It's irrefutable that Israel and its leaders are deliberately carrying out ethnic cleansing and genocide against the Palestinian people. There's no question whatsoever. Israel is committing war crimes. And its leaders, its prime minister, its president, its military leaders have all bragged about it. And all this evidence has been presented in the court proceedings. And yet, corporate media won't talk about it, and a lot of alternative media won't talk about it, especially Breitbart.com, which I'm convinced is 100% controlled by Israel. I think Breitbart.com is just a Mossad mouthpiece. That's what they are. just like the Washington Post is a CIA mouthpiece. So Breitbart won't cover the war crimes being carried out by Israel. Breitbart is, in essence, journalistically complicit in genocide against innocent human beings. That tells you something right there. And so are a lot of so-called alternative, independent, or conservative media. It's just incredible to watch this underway. I never thought that I would be looking across the landscape of alternative media and I would see people that I once thought were truth tellers are now complicit in genocide. And they celebrate it. It's just really incredible. Here's a headline from Al Jazeera. Houthi official says war now between supporters of genocide in Gaza and those against. In other words, that's the dividing line. Do you support genocide or are you opposed to genocide? So this person's name is Mohammed al-Bukhaiti, a senior Houthi official, has warned the U.S. and U.K. that they will regret attacking Yemen, which he described as, quote, the greatest folly in their history. He said that London and Washington had made a mistake in launching a war on Yemen. The world, he said, was now witnessing a unique war in which those supporting right and those who are wrong can clearly be identified. The goal of one of its parties is to stop the crimes of genocide in Gaza, represented by Yemen, while the goal of the other party, he said, is to support and protect its perpetrators, represented by America and Britain. Every individual in this world, he says, is faced with two choices that have no third, either to stand with the victims of genocide or to stand with its perpetrators. Yeah, it's very clear. And Breitbart stands with the perpetrators of genocide. And so does, you know, half the alternative media in America right now, which is absolutely crazy. And in today's best example of dark irony, the UK Defense Secretary, Grant Shapps, posted on X, he says that this action, the bombing, was not only necessary, he says, it was our duty to protect vessels and freedom of navigation in light of the threat to innocent lives and global trade that the Houthi attacks represent. So wait a second. The UK is talking about protecting innocent lives, but they won't demand a ceasefire from Israel? How dare you talk about protecting innocent lives? All you're doing is dropping more bombs, which is the opposite of protecting innocent lives. You want to stop the violence? Stop supporting the genocidal nation of Israel, which is so evil, so sadistic, that its leaders brag, its leaders celebrate acts of genocide. They're not even hiding it. They're not pretending. They openly call for it, and their soldiers dance and sing about genocide and eliminating all the women and children. And the UK supports that. So does the US. We're watching the real end times here for the West. The Western civilization is on the verge of absolute collapse. Did you see that US government debt went up 50% in 1 month in December? 50% rise in debt, month over month, in 1 month. Unbelievable. But the big story here is that now America is at war with, for the moment, Yemen. But guess what? It's going to expand. I warned everybody about this. This is escalating exactly as I warned, because next, it will be Iran getting involved. Iran will come to the aid of the Houthis, and ultimately Iran will be forced to attack U.S. Navy vessels. And I don't know what Hezbollah is going to do, or what's going to happen in Lebanon. I know that Nasrallah does not want to escalate yet. He's building up munitions in order to eventually overrun Israel, but that plan is a couple years down the road. If that plan has escalated to right now, well, then things are about to get ugly, very ugly, and it won't be safe in Beirut, that's for sure. But if Iran gets involved, and if the U.S. Navy loses a ship, which I'm going to go on the record here and predict the U.S. Navy loses a ship. This is coming. The U.S. Navy will lose a ship in this exchange. Have no doubt about it. And in fact, I think some elements of the U.S. Navy want that to happen because they want to be able to call for a larger war. They want to play the role of victims, and they want to bomb Iran. And that's why Iran has not yet attacked. But now that the U.S. and the U.K. are bombing Yemen, it's going to be very hard for Iran to resist coming to the aid of the Houthis in one way or another. It's going to be also difficult for Hezbollah to hold back, and even difficult for Erdogan in Turkey to hold back at the same time. So this bombing is a provocation. It's designed to escalate the war in the Middle East, and it's designed to ensnare Iran into the conflict. Now, once Iran gets involved, well then, this thing can go ballistic, it can go nuclear very quickly after that. Because once Iran gets involved, Russia will get involved. Why? Because Russia cannot allow Iran to be destroyed by the United States, even if the U.S. could, which is highly doubtful, by the way. But they can't allow Iran to be severely damaged because Iran is such an important gateway of trade and geography and energy and technology for the Russians and also for China. You know, Iran is one of the nations in the BRICS nations, and Iran is a major trading partner with Russia. From the point of view of Russia, America's attack on Iran is an attack on the community, the allies of Iran. And Russia cannot stand by and allow that to happen. And Russia has Kinzhal missiles. And you know that recent attack of numerous missiles that struck Ukraine? What was it, you know, less than a week ago? Most of those missiles got through. Ukraine's air defenses are largely depleted. Even according to Ukraine's own military, they only shot down, I think it was roughly 20% of the incoming missiles. They used to claim, you know, 90% were shot down. Now it's only 20%. The missiles are getting through. Russia has a lot more missiles. They've got hypersonic missiles, you know, air-launched hypersonics. That's air-to-ground, the Kinzhal. They've also got hypersonic air-to-air missiles. And, of course, they have, you know, the ICBMs and the hyperglide vehicles as reentry vehicles and so on. Russia's got far more advanced weaponry than does the United States. So if this escalates, the U.S. loses. I mean, and so does Israel. But the United States and Israel, in their arrogance, they don't realize it. They think escalation is good. They think that if they escalate, then they can bomb Iran and that they can destroy Iran. And they don't realize that escalation will turn against them because the other nations in the region, Iran, Russia, and so on, now have extremely advanced weapon systems that the U.S. is not properly taking into account. You know, because we have a woke military now. I mean, gosh, we have a Secretary of Defense that doesn't even show up. He just goes AWOL into a hospital for a week doing prostate cancer surgery. Nobody even knows where he is. What kind of a military is that? It's a woke, incompetent military. No wonder the Houthis aren't afraid of the United States military. I mean, what's the U.S. going to do? Unload, like, snowflake, woke-tard troops onto the beaches of Yemen? Well, here we are in our high heels and push-up bras. What? This is going to be like the LGBT invasion. The Houthis are going to laugh their asses off and kill the invaders. The U.S. does not have a functioning, effective military that can carry out land war against any, you know, sufficiently strong nation anywhere in the world. The U.S. can't fight a land war. U.S. soldiers are mostly too obese to even run. Some of them have heart attacks and die just trying to run. They're obese. They're living on junk food. They're hyper-privileged. They're woke. I'm not talking about all of them. I'm just saying, like, typically the younger recruits like this. Because the military has changed. It's been converted into like an LGBT indoctrination center. It's like daycare for woke-tards at this point. They can't fight and win a war anymore. If they could, then why didn't they win in Ukraine? Answer? Because they can't. Russia defeated America in Ukraine. And this is why the Houthis are not afraid. Yeah, you can bomb the Houthis. But Yemen is a pretty big place. There's a lot of land and there's a lot of underground facilities there. And eventually you run out of bombs. And then the Houthis like come back to the surface with their missiles and launch them at your ships. You know, it's not like you can hide the U.S. Navy ships. You can't hide them. They stick out like a sore thumb on the ocean. There they are. You can see them with binoculars. But the Houthis can hide their missiles and everything, their drones, in all kinds of underground storage. Well, you think they don't have tunnels? Of course they do. The U.S. is basically just wasting munitions to put on a show. The Houthis aren't afraid of the U.S. You know, the U.S. military is not what it used to be. All the guys I know from the military, almost all of whom are retired at this point, they were real soldiers, you know, real U.S. Army, Special Forces, United States Marines, Navy SEALs, real men who had courage, who had discipline, who had fight, who had spirit, you know. That's not what the military produces today. Nothing even close to that. Most of the good men and women in the military have retired, or they've just refused to re-up their deployments. They're like, I'm done with this nonsense. I'm out of here. What's left behind? I mean, from the world stage, it's a clown show. It's a joke. The U.S. military can't even meet its recruitment goals. I mean, who wants to join the military? I mean, what young man, typically, but women as well, wants to join, you know, the woke-tard military and go die for Israel, huh? Who wants to do that? Nobody. They're not joining up like they used to. And you know Israel's laughing like crazy right now. They're like, yes, we finally got the U.S. roped into this conflict just like we planned from the get-go. This is a Netanyahu special right here, manipulating the U.S. into war. And of course, it's all designed to cause escalation and destabilization. So another headline from Al Jazeera, U.S.-UK strikes on Yemen could have destabilizing implications for the region. This has been called a tremendously dangerous escalation by Trita Parsi, the executive vice president of the Quincy Institute for Responsible Statecraft. That's a fun name. Responsible statecraft? Is there such a thing? She says the strategy of the Biden administration has been to try to achieve de-escalation by escalating. Oh, it's not a she, it's a he. I'm sorry. He told Al Jazeera. Trita. It's a man. Okay. Apologies. Quote, he continues, it doesn't seem to work in the long run, clearly, because the Houthis are likely not going to back off. They're probably going to increase and intensify their attacks. Yeah, of course. He added that the strikes could have ripple effects that include a tremendous amount of destabilizing implications for the fragile ceasefire in Yemen and the wider region. Mm-hmm. Exactly. This is going to escalate. And then a former U.S. deputy chief of mission in Yemen named Nabil Kahouri says that these attacks on Yemen are a failure of U.S. diplomacy. He says, quote, this can only escalate from here. I think this is a bad mistake. I think there should have been a better effort to deter the Houthis. If the U.S. and Britain think that this will silence the Houthis, I think they've got another thing coming. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So watch carefully what happens. A third UK naval vessel is en route to the Red Sea. UK Foreign Secretary David Cameron has been seen going into Downing Street where Prime Minister Rishi Sunak resides. Let's see. They're talking with the cabinet. They're all panicked. They've got two naval vessels in the Red Sea and a third en route to join them. So what do you have here? You have increasing density of ship targets in the Red Sea. You realize the Red Sea is rapidly becoming a shooting gallery of floating Western naval vessels, US and UK, and that all it would take is one airburst nuke to take them all out. You can bet that Iran has already pondered this possibility, or perhaps even Russia. I mean, it's so obvious. This is bringing the concentration of naval power into the area and making them all, you know, big, fat, juicy targets. And, you know, it would be so easy to stop this. The U.S., all they would have to do is just give Israel an ultimatum. Hey, Israel and your satanic, lunatic, war criminal leaders, stop the genocide or we are leaving. We're going to sail all our ships out of here and leave you on your own. Leave you to Hezbollah. How about that? And Israel would have to stop the bombing. If you stop the bombing, then the Houthis stop harassing cargo ships. And then, quote, freedom of navigation is restored, and the cargo ships can sail through no problem. All you got to do is stop Israel from committing genocide. But the U.S. won't do it, and the U.K. won't do it, because they're complicit in it. That's why. And now let's get to the International Court of Justice, the ICJ, where an incredible array of evidence was laid out by South African attorneys against Israel, exposing Israel's deliberate genocide, the open encouragement of genocide by Israel's top leaders, its prime minister, its president, and its military leader, among others, various ministers and so on. I'm going to play a couple of clips for you here from the two South African attorneys who presented their case at the ICJ. It's an open and shut case. Israel is guilty of genocide. Israel is a war crimes state. And frankly, based on what Israel has been doing deliberately and encouraging, it's very clear that the United Nations should revoke Israel's charter and that Israel should no longer be recognized as a legitimate nation by any other nation in the world based on what Israel is doing right now. It is incompatible with human civilization and the international community of nations. Israel's actions are indefensible, inexcusable, and inhuman. But check out what these attorneys have to say about it.
The Special Rapporteur on the Human Rights of Internally Displaced Persons explains that houses and infrastructure, quote, have been razed to the ground, frustrating any realistic prospects for displaced Gazans to return home, repeating a long history of mass forced displacement of Palestinians by Israel. There is no indication at all that Israel accepts responsibility for rebuilding what it has destroyed. Instead, the destruction is celebrated by the Israeli army. Soldiers film themselves joyfully detonating entire apartment blocks and town squares, erecting the Israeli flag over the wreckage, seeking to re-establish Israeli settlements on the rubble of Palestinian homes, and thus extinguishing the very basis of Palestinian life in Gaza. Second, together with the forced displacement, Israel's conduct has been deliberately calculated to cause widespread hunger, dehydration, and starvation. Israel's campaign has pushed Gazans to the brink of famine. An unprecedented 93% of the population in Gaza is facing crisis levels of hunger.
All right, that was just the first clip. There's a lot more where that came from, but isn't it incredible that the Western corporate media won't cover this? Israel's crimes against humanity are so egregious that they even brag about them. And it's all coming out now in the International Court of Justice. Let me play a second clip for you from a different attorney from South Africa that has something else to add to this.
Senior political and military officials encouraged without censure the 95-year-old Israeli Army reservist Ezra Yachin, a veteran of the Deir Yassin massacre against the Palestinians in 1948, to speak to the soldiers ahead of the ground invasion in Gaza. In his tour, he echoed the same sentiment while being driven around in an officially Israeli army vehicle dressed in Israeli army fatigue. I quote, "Be triumphant and finish them off. And don't leave anyone behind. Erase the memory of them. Erase them, their families, mothers, and children. These animals can no longer live. If you have an Arab neighbor, don't wait. Go to his home and shoot him. We want to invade, not like before. We want to enter and destroy what's in front of us, and destroy houses, then destroy the one after it. With all of our forces, complete destruction, enter and destroy. As you can see, we will witness things we've never dreamed of. Let them drop bombs on them and erase them." As recently as 7 January 2024, a video of a soldier was posted online where he boasts that the army had destroyed the entire village of Hibat Azar. For 2 weeks, he said, they had worked hard to bomb the village and executed their mandate. Any suggestion that senior politicians did not mean what they said, much less that the meaning was not understood by soldiers in Gaza, would be without any merit. The scale of destruction in Gaza, the mass targeting of family homes and civilians, the war being a war on children, all make clear that genocidal intent is both understood and is being put into practice. The articulated intent is the destruction of Palestinian life in all its manifestations.
Well, there you go. And it goes on like that for many hours, just damning evidence against Israel that its own leaders openly not just called for genocide, but encouraged the soldiers to commit genocide and then celebrated genocide as they were carrying it out. There is no question whatsoever that Israel is guilty of genocide and war crimes. The only question is, will Israel be held responsible? Is the world so corrupt that Israel can control the International Court of Justice? I guess we're about to find out. And maybe the answer to that is yes. Maybe Israel has total control, that no one can criticize Israel, that Israel can slaughter anyone at any time for any reason and even celebrate it and brag about it and face no consequences for doing so. Is that the world that we live in? And how many of you listening to this support Israel right now, I wonder? Or how many people do you know who support Israel in this genocide? And you brush it aside and you pretend it's not happening. And in doing so, you become complicit in this. For refusing to speak out about this is an exhaustive moral failure. It is a failure of the test of being human. And it's shocking to me how many people are failing that test right now. Israel's actions right now represent, I would say, arguably the worst evil being committed on our planet today. Although there are greater evils throughout history, today in 2024, I can think of no more grotesque evil than what Israel is doing in Gaza. Nothing else even comes close. Fortunately, more and more people are waking up. Here's a comment on YouTube to that video clip. One person says, quote, "As an American, I'm ashamed that my taxes have made me an accomplice to this genocide and that I haven't done enough to convince our leaders to stop supplying Israel with the weapons being used to massacre innocent civilians in Gaza. Sending heartfelt respect and admiration to South Africa and its people for electing leaders with the courage to do the right thing." Yeah. Well, because South Africa endured apartheid. South Africa has a fresh memory of what tyranny and slaughter looks like, ethnic cleansing. And South Africa is in this process of calling out Israel. South Africa is redeeming its reputation on the world stage. And Israel is committing reputation suicide. Who will ever trust Israel again? Another person commenting on the video, the people of the world are revolted at what they are seeing in Gaza and disgusted at the lack of international condemnation of Israel. Here in the UK, any support for the Palestinian people is shouted down by the authorities. None of our unrepresentative politicians have the moral standards that you have shown the world. Another commenter says, South Africa, the only country with a human soul, who stood up against the bullies and showed what it means to be a human. Yeah, I'm seeing a lot of South African pride right now, well-deserved. Not hubris, not arrogance, but deserved pride to say, yes, we South Africans, we took a stand, we did the right thing, we called out evil. And today, there's no greater evil on planet Earth than what Israel is doing under its satanic leadership of Netanyahu and Gallant and others. You know, by the way, life is a test. We are living in a kind of spiritual simulation. And one of the very basic tests that a whole lot of people are failing is the test of, can you honestly speak in favor of protecting innocent human life? Are you even willing to do that? Because if you can't do that, you fail the test. You're going to fail life. It's so shocking to me to think about so many so-called Christians who are really Christian Zionists or Zionazis, and they think they're going to heaven, especially if they can just kill enough Arabs, you know? They're not going to heaven. God will judge them and reject them and send them to hell. I mean, how many Christian Zionists are actually going to burn in hell? And what a surprise that's going to be, because they thought they could kill their way to God's good graces. And it doesn't work that way. Sucks to be them, huh? In the afterlife, especially. If you can't stand up for innocent human life on this planet, you fail life. You fail. Nothing else you do matters if you can't pass the one basic test. I mean, your whole life is a failure if you can't pass this one test. Seriously. This is the most basic test that any creator would have of participation in life. Can you defend life itself? If you can't, you know what? From God's point of view, you probably don't deserve to have life from his point of view. That's why you're going to burn in hell. It's not complicated. By the way, we have an interview coming up with Dr. Shiva. And I asked Dr. Shiva about some of these issues, and he had fascinating responses. So you don't want to miss that. I should also explain what happened yesterday. I was trying to translate or dub my report into Arabic. And it was a big fail. So I need to explain what happened. I was using 11 Labs, which is, it's an artificial intelligence transcription and voice dubbing, voice cloning service. And they have a service which is called voice dubbing. And you can upload a file in English, let's say, and then you can tell them you want it translated into Arabic, and it will then speak the Arabic equivalent to your English with your own voice, as if you were speaking in Arabic. And apparently, this whole 11 Labs dubbing engine has a lot of bugs in it, because what it ended up producing was some kind of weird, like multi-layered, haunting, like sounded like demon-infested Arabic voices with some weird screaming here and there, and my voice dubbing over the whole thing in, but then some other people's voices just popping in randomly on top of my voice. It was all jacked up, and so I decided, well, I can't publish that because who knows what is in this thing? I don't speak Arabic. I don't know what it's saying. So the 11 Labs translation engine and dubbing engine is a fail as of this moment. But I thought I would play for you just a few seconds of maybe what some of the worst fails sound like. You want to hear that? Yeah, here it is. Okay, this is me speaking Arabic or a cloned version of my voice in Arabic with a horribly bad, I don't know, AI hallucinations or whatever was going on, horribly buggy software at 11 Labs, but this is what it sounded like.
اللي مطمعون في الدم اللي بعد الناس
أنتوا ترى
آخر مسلم ذبح لأي سبب
يعتقدون أن هذا بطريقة ما
يدي إلى عودة المسيح وإعادة بناء معبدهم. أريدك أن تعلم أن
All right, what'd you think? Huh? That was pretty freaky. Now I know why people say that the AI language machines are demonically possessed, because that some of that sounded demonically possessed to me. That was freaky. That's why I didn't post the whole thing, because imagine that for like 40 minutes. It would be bad news all around. And plus, like I said, I don't even know what the machine was saying in Arabic. Apparently, you know, it had a lot of bug problems, so maybe it pulled in somebody else's Arabic that was saying something that I didn't say. You know, I don't want some, like, Arabic clone of my voice out there saying something that I have no idea where that even came from. Although I guess that's possible. Anybody could take my voice from this recording and convert it into Arabic, and who knows what that thing would say. I have no idea. Such is the world today. Deep fakes galore. You can also apparently translate anything or dub it in Russian if you wish. Of course, I don't need that because my Russian is great. I can say, you want Russian missile systems, huh? See? That's all I can say. And that wasn't even Russian. But jokes aside, we have to try to use technology, but beware of its pitfalls. All right, changing subjects. The SEC has approved ETFs for Bitcoin. That's a big deal. I did an interview today about that. We'll play that real soon. It was part of Decentralized TV. That's coming up. And let's see. Did you know that Amazon.com has pulled the Noromectin product from its store? That's ivermectin in a 1% injectable solution. If you go there and you type in Noromectin, all you get is the pour-on version. You don't get the injectable version or the oral version any longer. Because, of course, of pressure from the FDA to make sure that nobody has access to ivermectin. So that's just Amazon making sure that more people die from pandemics. So, you know, what else is new, right? I also recorded a special report today about preparedness for the coming cold wave. Just some final thoughts on being ready for everything. I know I covered that a couple days ago. But did you know that if you go out today anywhere in most of North America and if you try to buy, let's say, propane, it's already gone, already sold. You can't get it. So, you know, the early preppers were definitely in a good spot on this. This is why I like kerosene heaters that can also run on diesel. So dual fuel kerosene heaters. And remember my tip, if you add a small amount of isopropyl alcohol to diesel, that is typically about 5 milliliters per liter. So you're only going to put, you know, 5 mils of isopropyl alcohol into 1 liter of diesel. That will help it burn cleaner in kerosene heaters that are appropriate for diesel fuel use. Just be safe about it. Don't use them indoors, obviously. You know, they're only usable in well-ventilated areas. And, of course, be safe about dealing with alcohol and diesel and flames and heat and all that stuff. So just be careful. And it's not a bad idea to think about prepping big time now because of this escalation into war. This war is going to get bigger. Oh, I forgot to mention, you know, what do you think is going to happen to energy prices? Yeah. They're going to skyrocket. What do you think is going to happen to the dollar? That's going to be abandoned by more nations around the world. This war is bad for America. And this is going to be the end of Western Europe. The economic decline is already well underway for the UK and Germany and so on. Western Europe is on its way out. Frankly, Western civilization is dying. The US dollar is dying. And this escalation into war is only going to expose the weaknesses of the West. The West is it's like a paper tiger at this point. The U.S. Navy can float ships around and, oh, look, we're big, bad ships. Not really. You can't land troops anywhere that's effective. You can't take over a nation on land. You can't beat any nation in a land campaign. All you can do is launch missiles and drop bombs, and eventually you're going to run out of those. So this is going to expose the weakness of the U.S. military and the weakness of the U.S. dollar and the weakness of Western civilization across the board. This escalation will actually only serve the interests of China, Russia, Iran, and the BRICS nations, and it will accelerate the move away from the dollar. That's the truth. That's where this is going. That's why I'm so frustrated about this. Israel dragged America into this, and America's going to lose. It's abundantly obvious. So let's go to that special report next, and then after that, we'll do the interview with Dr. Shiva. In the meantime, get ready, folks. America is at war, and this is a war that America is going to lose. The dollar will be lost. America as a nation won't last much longer. Western civilization won't last much longer. We do not have wise leaders. We're on a suicide mission, basically. This will not end well for the West. Well, there are a whole lot of people who own electric vehicles that are about to find out how horribly wrong things can go in the middle of a winter storm when the power grid isn't reliable. This Arctic blast that's coming through North America, well, there's no doubt this is going to cause some power grid outages in certain areas, not the whole country, and perhaps not even for a long period of time, but power will not be as reliable as it is normally. And one of the reasons is because everybody's going to be cranking up, of course, their furnaces, but also electric space heaters, which are a very inefficient way to heat a home. So you're going to have record heat usage or kilowatt hours being used in order to generate that heat. And then if people need to plug in their electric vehicles at the same time, you're going to get such demand on the power grid that it's just going to overload certain areas. It might even overload some individual homes. You know, your circuit breaker box can only handle a certain number of amps, and typically it's about 200 amps is how most homes are wired. And if you start running your furnace and then you have your emergency heat coils going on with your furnace, that can pull 40 amps right there. Now, I don't know how much your EV car charger pulls, but I would imagine that could pull easily 30 or 40 amps by itself, and then a bunch of space heaters and other things, and your clothes dryer. I mean, yeah, you could top out. You could be well above 200. Won't take that long. And what about the neighborhood? How many amps can the whole neighborhood handle? I mean, we're really going to find out that the system is not as reliable as you think. And there's no question that that's coming. Now, I saw that the Texas power grid controller called ERCOT, E-R-C-O-T, they announced that they have plenty of excess power generation, no problem, because they have wind and solar on top of everything else. Well, what if the wind doesn't blow on those days? I mean, granted, the wind is supposed to be blowing in the Arctic breeze, but what if the wind doesn't blow to the degree that you anticipate? Or what if the wind stops? What if it's just cold and no wind? What if it's slightly cloudy, so you don't have the solar? Well, what then? I think you don't have enough capacity. This is the problem. Granted, if the sun is out and the wind is blowing and you have all your coal plants online, sure, you can handle it. But that doesn't happen all the time. You know? So I'm taking my house off the grid on Monday. I'm taking my house off the grid. I'm switching over to my own local 50 kilowatt generator, and I'm just going to run on that. Because I don't want to wake up in the middle of the night, like 4 a.m, and the grid's down all of a sudden, you know? I'm just going to start my tractor, hook up my PTO generator, throw the transfer switch, and be done with it. And I'll just feed diesel into my tractor when I wake up in the morning. I'll just run the tractor all night. I trust my tractor to work a lot more than I trust the Texas power grid to work, because I lived through 2021, and I remember how badly that situation went. And I remember how we were all sitting there in the dark, no power grid. No heat. No comms. Nothing. Gas stations didn't work. You know, the governor signed an emergency order that said you could use red dye diesel in your trucks, which I took advantage of that. You know, farm diesel on the roads. Emergency order. Because nobody could get fuel at the gas station. So look, bottom line is, the storm isn't going to be as bad as I first thought. The temperatures won't be as crazy. But it's still going to be very, very cold. Which means you're going to have record demand. Which means power grids are going to get strained. And all it takes is one other problem, like one technician, you know, forgetting to turn on a switch or something, which happens all the time. And then, boom, you've lost grid production capacity. And all of a sudden, you have to have rolling blackouts. So if we get through this event with no blackouts, just consider that a miracle. And I don't think that's going to happen. We're going to have blackouts somewhere across North America. As that cold blast whips through, we're going to have grid down situations, which, you know, reminds us all, have backup comms, right? Have backup power generation, have backup heat. This is why wood burning stoves are such a great idea, because obviously they don't need electricity to function. So let's just watch, right, and see what happens. I'll be covering it, assuming we have the ability to upload audio files and things like that, if we have any bandwidth. I'll be covering it. We'll see how it goes, and hopefully things will turn out better than they did, 3 years ago. But I know you're well prepared if you're listening to this. I'm definitely much better prepared than I was in the past, and hopefully we'll get through this together. So be safe, stay prepared, and hunker down. It's going to be a cold one for most of us in North America. Maybe not all of you in California or Florida, but for the rest, it's going to be a cold spell for sure. Thanks for listening. We'll talk to you soon. Take care. Welcome to today's interview on Brighttown.com. I'm Mike Adams. I'm joined today by Dr. Shiva, who is, of course, running for the president of the United States as an independent. And among all the voices out there, every time I talk to Dr. Shiva, I think this guy should be in the Oval Office because he gets it. He's uncensored. I mean, he's so brilliant in his understanding of the problems and how we resolve them that I just keep asking him back on the show. So, Dr. Shiva, it's an honor to have you on. Thanks for joining me today.
Great to be here, Mike. How are you?
I am doing great. And being able to talk with you is a highlight of my day. So thank you for coming on.
Great. That's sweet of you. Yeah.
Well, do you want to begin, Mike, or you want me to go?
Yeah. I think what I want to talk about, Mike, if we have time, is, you know, our campaign, but particularly, you know, the larger issue of how the swarm, the elites, actually do election fraud. And what I've actually experienced, so it's not just theory. And recently what occurred was one of our really, really wonderful volunteers who's our state leader in Kentucky. And by the way, Mike, all of our volunteers who help us are all working people, either moms or retired people, right? They actually had worked or do work for a living. And this gentleman is a full-time electrician who on his Sunday, you know, gets up at 7, works a full-time job, and then he goes and collects signatures for us. Many people know to get on the ballot, if any one of us honestly want to get on the ballot, the GOP and the DNC don't even have to collect signatures, Mike, to get ballot access. And then other people like Booby F. and Kennedy just go beg for money from, you know, from the Zionists, and they give it to him. And then he doesn't have any volunteers. So he takes $15 million and goes hires professional consultants for $10 a signature to get on the ballot. Every state has different signature requirements. Utah's signature requirements is about 1,000, very little. You know, Florida's around 130,000. I think Texas maybe 20,000, Massachusetts is 10,000. And so in order to get on the ballot for ordinary people like ourselves who are working people who actually come from below, we actually do it the honest way, Mike. We actually get volunteers. Volunteers have to be passionate about us. Then they have to get over their nervousness to go to the front of a store, wave their hand and say, hey, will you sign to get Dr. Shiva on the ballot? And the intimidation that takes place in this process is no different probably than what black people faced, you know, 100 years ago when they were trying to vote. But now it's happening to people of all colors. And let me explain what happened in Kentucky. In one of the most egregious examples, this young man, 28-year-old electrician, big, big supporter of our campaign. On Sunday, he goes in front of a Walmart in Franklin, Kentucky. By the way, the home, the red state, home to quote unquote constitutionalist Thomas Massey and Rand Paul. He goes in front, and by the way, he has every right to collect signatures during an election cycle, as long as you're not inhibiting, blocking anyone. So he's in front of the Walmart, and after collecting around 7 signatures, the store manager comes out and he says, "You have to leave. You can't do that here." He says, "No, I have a right, because you see, 1980, there was a Prunyard ruling in the Supreme Court, and subsequent rulings like Glovsky versus Roach Brothers in Massachusetts, other straight Supreme Courts, which basically said during an election cycle, and if you're collecting nomination signatures and you're not harassing or inhibiting anyone, even the private parking lot, the private property of a retailer, the rights of that private property get superseded by the individual constitutional rights." It's quite amazing, Mike, that the courts ruled this. So what that means is, again, the predicate of law is it has to be during an election cycle and you're collecting nomination signatures to get someone on the ballot and you are not obstructing anyone. So anyway, this very fine, well-mannered volunteer, one of the nicest people I know, after the store manager came out, then another store manager came out. This is what everyone faces as a young volunteer. You know, two guys, you need to leave, trying to harass him. He says, "Look, I'm not leaving. I have a right to be here." Subsequent to that, police officers show up. And they say, "You have to leave. You're trespassing." He says, "No, I actually have a right to be here." And they handcuff him, Mike.
Wow.
Put him in the back of a car. Take him to the police station. Strip search him. Cavity search him.
Oh, my gosh.
Okay, jail him. And then I did an emergency live, and I told everyone as much as I could. And I said, "Look, call the police." And I was actually on the phone with the supervisor. I said, "Look, officer, he has every right to be there. Kindly let him go." And their response was, "We're going to do whatever we want."
Wow.
And so anyway, after all these phone calls came in, hopefully it was because of that, they let him out later in the evening.
Did they? Charge him?
Stole his money out of his wallet.
Oh, wow.
All right. And then he had to walk back to his car and to go to work the next morning.
So now, just total harassment, complete tyranny.
Total tyranny. And I think that's the right word. And now let's step back and look at where this occurred. Walmart, a company that sells Chinese crap all day to working class people.
Yep.
A multi-billion dollar company who made a ton of money during the pandemic, along with the 600 other billionaires. The police are actively not trained in one of the most fundamental rights that they should be defending. They're the enforcement division of the United States, right? Executive branch, legislative branch, judicial. The police are under the executive branch, whose job it is to enforce the laws. Well, the laws have been created. His individual constitutional right to collect signatures during an election cycle supersedes even the property rights at that moment in time, because the courts in their wisdom actually ruled that, hey, how else is ordinary working people ever going to collect signatures? These are thoroughfares, or actually public town squares.
But let's right? be clear, Dr. Shiva, Joe Biden doesn't even need to get signatures.
No, nope.
He's automatic. But yeah. If someone had to collect signatures for Joe Biden in front of Walmart, the police never would have been called.
They would never touch him. They would never touch him, or Trump, or any of these guys, right? Because they're part of the institutional parties who know all the law enforcement. I mean, it's one big racket. But here's a young man by himself. Now, I'll give you another example, Mike. I think 2 months ago, I was out in Utah because I like going and training our volunteers on the ground. It's bitter cold. I like actually going and collecting signatures. You never see Kennedy. You'll never see Elizabeth Warren. You'll never see Bernie Sanders. None of these guys ever do the work. So I go out there with 3 of our volunteers to do training. We only need 1,000 signatures, Mike. Kennedy had gone and done a backroom deal saying, "Oh, I can't collect signatures. Please, please give me more time." And then he goes and raises $15 million, Mike, begging he can't collect signatures. The reality is he's got no ground support. No one's going to go work for him, a billion-dollar trust fund boy, you know? But the reality is we actually have volunteers. So we go out to Utah. You know, we go to what's called the Harmons in Orem, Utah, collect signatures. Again, as we're collecting signatures. A store manager comes out. First, "Oh, you have to leave." I said, "No, we have every right to be here." I went to get a cup of tea. And then I come out. 3 cruisers are there, you know, with guys with, you know, boasting like they're going to arrest all of our three volunteers. And I said, look, we have every right to be here. You may think this is private property, but during an election cycle, our constitutional rights prevail. So they then call the supervisor. Now, in this case, because I'm articulate, Mike, and I've done this for a long time, I know the law. I flipped the supervisor. He said, wow, this is interesting case law. I didn't know. He called up the state attorney. He goes, yeah, you have every right to be here.
Wow.
Then he went and reprimanded the store manager. You see, but that takes a tremendous amount of effort. It is not my job to educate the police force of the United States. You see, so what they've done is the two establishment parties make sure no one, and even when they do their thing, Biden versus Trump, ooh, Biden's thrown off here, now we're going to throw it to Trump. They make it red versus blue. That's the bogus dialectic. Or then they're going to have black and white people fighting in this election cycle, right? They're going to do a race war. The real war, Mike, in many ways, is the fact that a set of the swarm do not want someone like me or you, one of us, ever getting on the ballot, ever approaching the Oval Office. So what they've done is they have ballot access, like the king who doesn't want, you know, the peasants coming in. That's the first moat that they've created.
That's right. That's right.
And they intimidate. I mean, you have to understand, I'll do an open house tonight. We have all these young people, older people come. You know, just think about if you're an activist or new activist, it's a big thing. Oh, I got to go and collect signatures. You know, you got to get over your shyness. Then you have to deal with the store manager. Then the police come. You're scared shitless at that point, right? You don't have the training. So we have to do that training. But there's no reason for this. This is pure intimidation. And they by design do not train the police officers. I mean, to me, anyone who's getting a gun and a badge, the first thing they should be trained is a Prunyard ruling, because it's foundational to the democratic system. So that's one of the biggest barriers to entry they've created, Mike. And what's disgusting about this, this was a working class American who has very little money, who is going to a Walmart where working class people are going, his neighbors, a multi-billion dollar company who exploits workers in China, workers in the United States. And who did the police come protect? A multi-billion dollar company.
That's right.
Right. So this is what's happening. The next level of fraud that they do, who gets visibility? In spite of all my accolades, in spite of all the things I've done, they make sure I never get on mainstream media. That's why I respect what you do and other alternative media people, because you give us the opportunity to reach people. So overnight, Vivek the Snake, guy comes out of nowhere, a total scumbag, right? Big Pharma brown noser, says he's against affirmative action, took affirmative action money. Overnight, they make their slate of people, all of them who bow down to Israel, they get visibility overnight on the grifter media network as well as the mainstream media. So that's part of the election fraud way up front, which I've experienced. You know, when I ran multiple times, even though I was supposed to be on the debate stage, they kept me off. They try to keep us off the ballot access. In Massachusetts, Mike, when we ran, we got 25,000 signatures, even though we only needed 10, okay? And we were everywhere. So like, holy shit, this guy is overcoming, you know, our moat. He's coming, scaling the wall. So then what they do, then the third or fourth type of election fraud they have is on election night, right? Which is a mail-in ballot and how to flip the votes. And I've experienced all of those, Mike. So we don't really have a democratic system. It is a democratic system for the bourgeois, for the elites. It is not for everyday people.
You're absolutely right. And more Americans are waking up to realize this, especially as Trump, you know, being evicted from the ballots in Colorado and Maine. But just the fact that Democrats would attempt such an action and that they would claim that this is how we protect, quote, democracy, is by destroying democracy. Like, and you even hear people on the left now, influencers, saying it's too dangerous to let the voters vote. That you can't allow people to vote. I mean, there's no longer even the pretense that this is a representational constitutional republic at this point. We are so far gone that I'm not sure we can ever pull it back. What do you think?
Well, Mike, what's happening is the Trump-Biden thing, that is, remember what I've said before and we've talked, there is the real problems, which is the fact that working people like myself, you and others, if we try to run for office, we don't have the access to billions, right? So we have to really build a bottoms-up movement. And that's what fears them, working people, us, the real us versus them. So what they're doing, Mike, is they're creating the fake dialectic, right? Republicans versus Democrats. Ooh, Trump is not allowed on the ballot over in Maine. Okay, so we're going to stop Biden over in Texas, you see? So they're creating the red versus blue dialectic. And then they'll have, you know, black people and white people fighting or whatever that is. But the real fight here is about hardworking people, American people who actually work hard. When they want someone to be their representative, like myself, all the other things they do, because for ballot access, for visibility, et cetera. So the great deception that's going on here, Mike, is they know the real fights, the real issues that are going on. So they're creating this theater. So they pull over the left or the right into this fake WWE fight. They sound good, but they are not the real fight.
Yes.
And
yes.
They want to subsume the real fight, which is really against every working American in this country.
That's right.
What this is about.
The system is at war against we the people. There's no question about that at this point.
Exactly.
Now, I want to ask you, just to change the subject a little bit, I want to ask your take on the various religious ethnic groups in America and how they have rising influence and how they may shape this next election. And in particular, Muslim Americans who are fed up with the Democrats and Joe Biden's support for Israel's incessant mass bombing of civilians in Gaza, which many people consider to be genocide. And in fact, we have the International Court of Justice now hearing the case of genocide filed by South Africa against Israel right now. But what do you think about the various religious ethnic groups, Hindus in particular, Muslims, Jews? I mean, Not just Christians. I mean, Christians is kind of like the default, I suppose, in America these days. But what about these other groups and how they can sway this next election?
Yeah, it's a good question, Mike. I think, again, if we step back and we look at this, starting with what you talked about with Israel and Palestine and what's going on there, right? If you really look back at this, you know, we have to recognize that Zionism, it's very, very fundamental, is a political ideology, which is no different than Nazism, which is no different than Indian Brahmanism. Since you bought these religions, the architecture I wanted to pose to people is there are religions and there are political ideologies. Religions get people very, very passionate. So Zionism took a little bit of some random stuff from Judaism, created by a guy who was an atheist, Theodore Herzl, but it was fundamentally a racist political ideology. Nazism, the same thing. Again, it said a few people are better than others. Nazism, the same thing, which took some principles from some elements of Christianity, very few. Indian Brahmanism took some pieces of Hinduism and said these people are the upper caste and everyone else is lower. And it was very interesting to watch, right? You saw the Indian Brahmins in India support the bombing and the destruction of Palestine. Brahmanism equals Zionism equals Nazism. And we can do a whole, you know, analysis on that. Now, when you come down to it, historically, people of all religions, when you go back to ancient times, lived quite well together.
Yes.
Okay? Very well, right? I mean, I remember growing up in Bombay as a child, next door were Christians. You know, they would put up their Christian star, Muslims, Zoroastrians, Hindus. There was no fights like this. However, powers, politicians, imperialists, colonialists know how to go into a neighborhood where people are living reasonably well, go among the Hindus and say, oh, the Muslims think you smell, right? Or go among the Muslims and say, the Hindus think you're like this. And you can literally start, you know, religious wars overnight. And those in power do this, okay? Because when they have mayhem and chaos, they can use that to control resources. The British are the most clever at doing this. The divide and rule policy, they did it over Africa, over India. And that's why Zionism coming into Palestine was critical for them to control that strategic area. So in the United States, something no different is taking place, Mike. Particularly if you look at the Christians in the United States, right? They've been literally been exploited by Zionism. The evangelical Christian leaders, they literally report up to Netanyahu and Israel, literally. That's crazy.
That's crazy. I mean, yeah, Netanyahu is a war criminal. I mean, that guy should be arrested and tried for crimes against humanity, in my opinion. And how can any Christian who claims to follow the teachings of Christ follow a man who is a Satanist destroyer of innocent lives? My God.
Yeah. So what's happened, Mike, is even among the Christian evangelicals, the discussion you said has taken place. People are challenging their pastors now. They're saying, so this eschatological view, which is a big philosophical term, which basically means one view of Christianity, which says that when the Jews return back to Jerusalem, you know, then the rapture will take place, Armageddon. That garbage is not anywhere really in the Bible. It's a very small piece that was created by a guy called Martin Heckler, then later, you know, intertwined with Zionist teachings. And that view of Christianity, which has nothing to do with the love that Christ talked about or the New Testament, got imported into the United States and taken over, particularly among the large majority of white working class Americans. So you have Israel using a philosophical approach of some bogus nonsense, Christian Zionism, 70 million of them, right? They're not Jews, but they're ultra Zionists. So there has been literally a brainwashing that took place by hijacking a religion. And that brainwashing basically supports the chosen people nonsense, right? A racism, which is nothing that Christ would ever talk about.
Well, right.
And as a part of that, we have created all these religious differences, right? Oh, the Muslims are like this and the Hindus and this. So again, who does this serve? We have to look at who this serves. As long as we are fighting among ourselves over race or religion or what you cook or what you eat or where you live, how your accent is, absolutely fine for these people in power, right? And that's what this is about. So
yes,
the left and the right will manipulate people as needed. And by the way, as a side note, I'll note, Mike, you know, remember everyone said, oh my God, you know, first the Democrats said Trump was put into power by the Russians, right? And that was proven to be a hoax. But one of the things people forgot about, and a very good investigative reporter brought this out 8 months ago, 9 months ago, and very few media people have covered this, that when you go look at the Mueller report, the redacted version, you go to the original FBI report, there was someone who put Trump into power. And it was Netanyahu who met with Roger Stone. And this is a real story.
What?
It was Israel, yes. It was Israel who struck a deal, backroom negotiations. It's all well documented with Roger Stone. And the deal was that Trump would do two things for Israel. Make sure to F up the Iran deal, the nuclear deal, and move
the
embassy
right.
to Jerusalem.
Right. Which he did.
And if you look at Trump's entire cabal around him, all Zionist hoodlums, start with his son-in-law. All right. Stephen Miller. Just go look at the whole thing. He's as Zionist as you can get.
Oh, there's no question that Trump is completely loyal to Israel. And that's a huge issue. I mean, he is among many candidates and politicians who put America second
last.
And Israel first. Right. Exactly. But I want to ask.
And you've had one point is if you go read Netanyahu his entire life, he basically thinks Americans are stupid.
He does.
We could manipulate them. And
he says it.
In many ways, through his contacts with other Zionist hoodlums like Ari Emanuel, who runs UFC and WWE and all the entertainment, it is Zionism that has occupied the United States. So all of these liberal, including the liberal Zionists who are out there with their ceasefire now T-shirts, and they've been doing this for 40 years. They too report up to Zionism because they don't want to get to the real issue, Mike, that Zionism has occupied the United States. And you can be a Muslim Zionist. You can be a Hindu Zionist. You can be a Christian Zionist. A lot of Hindu Zionists who supported the butchering of the Palestinians. The Saudi Arabians have supported, you know, they're supposedly Muslims, right? And they've supported their Zionists. So we need to understand that the swarm, the elites know no boundaries. So, and we have to get out of this. And they want to make this religious divisions.
Of course,
right?
They do.
Oh, okay. And once we as working people get clear about this consciously, it's going to be very, very hard for them to manipulate us anymore, Mike. And that's what a lot of the effort in our campaign and everything we do.
All right.
Ahead.
So let me all mention right, then for those watching, yep. If you want to support Dr. Shiva's campaign or learn more about it, go to shivaforpresident.com. And that's the numeral 4, right? shivaforpresident.com. There you go. And there's a donate button there. If you wish to donate, you can read about Dr. Shiva's platforms and efforts across all the states. Be sure to check that out. Now, shifting gears a little bit here, Dr. Shiva, let's talk about Black America. Because Black America, well, I should say the Democrats are losing more and more of the votes of Black Americans. And I think the main factor here is because of the migrant invasion, the wide open borders, and the fact that migrants are now in cities like Chicago and New York and Denver and L.A. And in many ways, like, you know, look at Chicago Mayor Johnson there, the resources that once went to help with like food banks and resources for local people who were living on the edge of poverty, those resources have been shifted now to illegals there. And there have been even local protests among Black Chicago residents who are saying, what about us? We're Americans. Why are you focusing on all these non-Americans who illegally cross the border while us Black Chicago residents are being completely ignored? So your thoughts on that issue and how the Democrats are losing the Black vote.
Yeah, Mike, I think if we look back at the central principle here, the central principle is the forces of power, profit, and control, like this Walmart, okay? Remember, during the pandemic, 600 billionaires increased their wealth by $2.3 trillion, okay? Well, small business were going out. So if you go to the central principle, the forces of power, profit, and control do not want the hardworking, ordinary working people of the United States, or even in some other country, seeing that we're actually brothers and sisters, okay? They don't want that phenomenon taking place. So as long as they can keep us divided, it works. So think about the phenomenon here. It has been for nearly 60 years that Democrats and Republicans have never wanted to solve the quote unquote, the immigration issue. Why? Because one wing profits from the voter base and the other wing profits at Wall Street. The Republicans profit by low cost labor and the other ones profit by votes. And this is why they've never said, okay, we're not gonna leave our congressional session until we actually figure this out. And there is a solution to this, okay? And I can talk about it, but they have no interest in solving this. They need to perpetuate this. Why? Well, for two reasons. They get this both exploitative uses on the electoral process and on the financial system. But the other fundamental piece is, Mike, they precisely want this. They want the illegal immigrants fighting against poor blacks and whites. Now they can stand back and they can watch this mayhem take place while they are stealing, you know, they're, you know, printing more money, and they get away with, in fact, more exploitation. And no one wants to step back and look at this fundamental issue that much of the immigration issue is, from a system standpoint, began with Democrats and Republicans starting these crazy wars and supporting dictators in other countries who subjugate their own people. Because, you know, go look at Chile, right? Or go look at Guatemala, you know, very, very large imperial interests with the backing of the U.S. imperial military went, go to other countries. We subjugate people, extract massive profits for them, not for the working people here.
That's right.
And then when those people leave, we call them, you know, horrible people. Now, my solution for this entire immigration problem is very simple. If you look at the United States, let's say there's around 25 million illegal immigrants. There, a vast majority of them, Mike, you know, do all the work that others don't want to do, right? And my view is, okay, if they for 10 years or a certain period of time have not committed any crime, you put them on a path to legal immigration. However, you start taxing them right away. It'll generate about $2 trillion, Mike, in revenue. And there are other Americans in America who take advantage of this system. We have to relook at what citizenship means. There are people who sit on welfare rolls, who collect disability, you know, who don't do any work, right? So you have two phenomena going, or a set of people that are leave their countries because they see America, right? They see an easy way to come in, and it's made easy because then you can keep the cost of labor low. And both parties and the elites profit from that. And then at the same time, they make sure American citizens are not motivated to work, right? We're going to give you free money. We're going to give you free money. We're going to support even though you're not disabled. So you have two phenomenon going here. It's very hard to find people to work.
Yes.
It's very hard to find people to work.
Oh,
Mike.
You don't have to tell me.
Try to find an electrician, a plumber, someone who, you can't do it.
Look, I run a food warehouse. I mean, I know all about what you're talking about. And, you know, you're absolutely right, but I have a question for you on this. So new immigrants to America, whether legal or illegal, they do tend to bring a very strong work ethic with them, something that has been lost from most of America's youth. I mean, America's youth today, they're just consumers, like, give me everything, give me free handouts and stimulus, and I buy tennis shoes. I don't make tennis shoes, right? That's their attitude. But you know what, Dr. Shiva? When immigrants come into America, typically the work ethic lasts one generation, and that's it. And then their kids go to public school, and they become just as entitled and lazy as the American kids.
Yeah.
Exactly the same.
Yep.
I mean, because we have a cultural problem.
I've seen it in my own family, Mike. You know, my parents and I have worked hard, and I can see my nephew, right? Very, very different work ethic, you know? And I'm like, but you see that in one generation. When I hire people like you probably have, Mike, it is very hard to get 20, 30-year-olds because the parents, indigenous parents from the 60s and 70s didn't even train their kids properly, right? There was no discipline.
That's right.
So you have this cultural phenomenon that we've lost that made this country so powerful, right? Hard work, right? Showing up, discipline, values. That has been extricated from this country. And who has done that? The same people that I'm running against, right?
That's exactly right.
You look at all these people, they've never worked. Go look at Vivek the Snake. Has he ever worked for a living? Booby Kennedy, has he really ever worked? Has he, like you, Mike, created a business bottoms up? These people live a very vacuous thing, thinking they're working. It's all very bougie for them, okay? It's not real work. So the people who are not working, who are bullshitting everyone, are the same people. I was on an interview with a young kid called Sneeko yesterday, right? And he's like, oh, I love Vivek the Snake. He says the right things. I said, don't be a dope, okay? You claim you like me, and you're talking about someone, his entire life has been about cheating. So forget what people say. Look at what they actually did. How did they make their money? And that's the inflection point we're at, Mike, this very fundamental issue of values. So yes, the immigrants that come in, right, they work hard. And the second generation, they almost get spoiled the infrastructure or the value system. And I'm saying, you know, I think there's an ancient traditional thing. If you want to look at how bad a fish is, go to the head of the fish, right? It is the people who are running the governance systems of this country. None of them work, Mike. Can anyone tell me what Joe Biden did to make money? Can anyone really tell me? I mean, a friend of mine used to advise Trump. He said, you know, when he was in bankruptcy, he goes, I'm a billionaire. He goes, no, Donald, you're actually a negative billionaire. You have $2 billion in liabilities, $1 billion in assets, okay? You're a reality show businessman. So all of this that we're seeing on this media are not real people, Mike. They don't work. So if you're a young person, you're watching all the celebrity culture, you said, oh, wow, they're doing this, they're doing that, right? They get all this bling. They don't work. I want to be like that. So it is the head of the fish that is training our young people or the immigrant second generation say, oh, I'm going to find an easy way. And this is what's really, really horrible. And this is what's going to decay this country, you know, from top down. And this is why people need to know that people like me exist, you exist, that I'm running for office. And we are actually doing it the hard way, right? We go,
yes.
We have to now file a lawsuit. We don't beg for money. I haven't asked one time for money on this program, okay?
Because you work hard. I know how hard you work. You apply yourself. And I would say for myself, I work as hard as an immigrant. You know, I do.
Yep.
I work harder than anybody I know. Now, my wife is an immigrant, you know, from Taiwan. And I was a guest in the country of Taiwan with residency in Taiwan. I know what it's like to be a foreigner in another place. I lived in Ecuador, in South America. I was a guest in Ecuador. I had a driver's license there in Espanol. I had to take the test in Spanish, verbal and written in Spanish. I make an effort to learn the language. That's why I speak, you know, enough Mandarin to get by on the streets of Taiwan or China. But I see people, so many people coming to America. Now, granted, on one hand, you have the immigrants that want to work and want to become part of the American dream. And again, my wife is an immigrant and she's an outstanding American contributing to this society in ways that people don't even know. But then there's the group that just want to come here and take. They just want the welfare, the handout. They want to commit crimes. They want to loot America, Which, I mean, it's hard. They got to stand in line because the politicians are looting America first.
Right. Right. And if you look at what you just said, you have one set of immigrants who are coming here legitimately, want to work hard. There's another set. It's almost like they have watched the American lumpen proletariat, if you want to say it, who sit at home, don't do something, smoke weed all day, whatever they want to do, right? And they are living off disability checks when they're not disabled, and they learn how to work the system. So you have another set of those illegal immigrants who are coming here learning from their American brethren how to do it, you know? So you have this two phenomenon going on. And I think it's quite extraordinary because the politicians over 60 years do not want to solve this problem, Mike. That's, I think, the key thing. They want to keep American labor wages actively suppressed. That's one of the reasons for letting illegal immigrants in, because now you keep labor costs low, Mike. So we have to understand, if you follow the money, the swarm and the politicians and the puppets they have will talk a big game every election cycle. But at the end of the day, they do not want to do anything to perturb this.
Well, because
the other thing we need to understand, Mike, a lot of the immigrant trade, right, coming in, the child trafficking, the drug trafficking, people need to understand a lot of this has to do with laundering of money. There's massive, massive amounts of laundering of money that takes place with these southern border countries where American companies, there's a whole nother thing we could talk about from a systems analysis, how American companies sell goods over there and bring back in, they launder money. So it's a much deeper problem that the politicians do not want to really solve because it's against their interests. Because ultimately, Mike, we're living with organized crime.
Yeah,
you're looking at organized crime families who are actually running the world in this country.
Well, and I wanted to ask you this too. I mean, it's related to that, Dr. Shiva, but the so-called free market economy, it's almost gone. I mean, I'm a business person. I know you started businesses. I have to compete by creating value and contributing value to society, where the most successful businesses, like Big Pharma, they just get tens of billions of dollars of handouts from the government to buy their vaccine, and then later they pay to destroy the same vaccine because they overbought it, or the weapons industry, or the, you know, the green energy companies that got billions of dollars during the Obama administration, and then they never made a product. They just took the money, paid salaries, walked away, went golfing or whatever. And how do they get more support from our government than companies like mine or private industry companies that are offering a healthy product that enhances and protects human health? I mean, we are the people who build societies, damn it. And these other snakes, I got to watch my language. These other snakes, all they do is they take money and they destroy. And that's who gets the handouts at the corporate welfare level, as well as the handouts to the illegals. Our government supports the destroyers of our society.
Yeah, Mike, look, what happens is, think about it this way, right? If you just follow through, and I've seen it in front of my eyes, you're born into some family, right? You're born into a hard working class family, or you're born into a very, very super wealthy family. Nothing against, it's not your fault, okay? But if you happen to hit the birth lottery in this latter group, right, or you happen to wind your way into this latter group, you're overnight in a club, Mike. So let me explain. So if you look at entrepreneurialism and what you just commented on, the market economy, the goal was the cream rises to the top, right? You have competition, cream rises to the top. But that's not what it occurs, okay?
No.
Let's take this guy, Vivek the Snake, okay? Goes to his parents or doctors. He's never really had to work. He gets to go to a private school, gets to go to Harvard, okay? Which is basically networking country, okay? A little bit different than Harvard and MIT. And MIT, you actually have to learn how to make stuff, build stuff. You don't get in. You know, 50 to 60% of the admissions at Harvard are legacy admissions, which legacy means you don't have to really work. Mama and papa, you met the right guy at the tennis club, whatever, right? So when you go to a place like Harvard, you're in a club, okay? Yale is even more of that. Vivek the Snake went to both. So he goes to Harvard, all right? And then what does he do, Mike? He wants to, did he actually innovate something? Did he start a business? No, he calls up his Harvard friends who he did a hedge fund with, raises $5 million. You see, you or I cannot do that, Mike, overnight, okay?
No.
But he's able to call his buddies because they're all part of the same swarm network. Gets $5 million bucks, then overnight goes to GlaxoSmithKline. And again, to be able to call GlaxoSmithKline, Mike, you and I know when we did cold calling, it's a lot of work. Well, he can probably make two calls because they're all part of the same swarm. And he goes to GlaxoSmithKline, the number one big pharma, one of the top big pharma companies. They have a drug, Mike, that failed clinical trials not once, not twice, not three, four times, Mike, for supposedly Alzheimer's. It's failed drug in phase two clinical trials. He buys that drug for $5 million, which is relatively low. Then what does he do next, Mike? The scheme is I'm going to get all these friends I know, stockbrokers, all these people, and I'm going to create a company and I'm going to hype this drug I got out. I'm going to hype it to say it's actually efficacious. When he knew, Mike, it was useless. How does he do that? He gets his mother, part of his own swarm network, to go get the clinical data and throw out all the data, Mike, where people never finished the trial. It's called a completer analysis. Now it looks like the drug works, Mike. Somewhat works.
Because some people got so sick they couldn't even continue in the trial?
Yeah, so his mother takes those out.
Wow.
And then presents
that. So cherry picking the data.
Yes. At a seminar, at a poster session, God knows how she got into that poster session, probably knew other people, all right? Presents that, and by the way, the poster session is the lowest form of academic credibility, okay? Uses that poster session presentation to go on Cramer, MSNBC, and you can see it's all out there.
Yeah.
Boosts up the stock price, cashes her out $40 million, and then when they do the clinical trial, Mike, which they have to, he waits 2 years, it fails, obviously. Stock price drops 99%, Mike, and then he shuts down the company. Now, wow. Look at that process. And then he gets to be put on the debate stage. And then he's promoted as some anti-establishment guy when he literally is a ChatGPT version of watching all my videos. You see? so think about right. What they're doing. Think about what they're doing, man. His entire existence, his entire wealth is coming from the swarm network. Okay, it's an insider model. He never had to sit in the lab like I do, actually do the computations, do the work, ever actually figure out some compounds that work, right? Never had to do, it's financial bullshit engineering. And you can go over and over and over, this is not fair competition. They're part of the monopoly. Now go look at Silicon Valley. When I was trying to raise money for one of my companies, Echomail, Mike, there's a road in Silicon Valley called Sand Hill Road. The five major VCs are there. And if any one of them select you, you know, they give you money overnight, Mike, you're going to be a multi-billion dollar company. Why? Because, you know, and I was given funding from one of the Sand Hill Road companies and another one. And I did not want to work with them. OK, because I was actually making revenue, Mike. I didn't need their money. But regardless, what I found in this insider model is when one of those VCs decides to bless you and anoint you, guess what, Mike? Overnight, they give you customers. I mean, you ever wonder why all these social media companies overnight, LinkedIn has got a million customers, right? How do they do that? Because when the VCs fund them, they have an entire network to give you customers overnight. You say?
Well, so right. But the VCs won't fund you unless you also agree to go full woke. You have to ban anybody who supports Trump in that case over those years. You have to hate America. I mean, you have to have a value system that is anti-human. In order
you have to probably be a Zionist. Okay, very important. But the bottom line is that they don't have to build anything bottoms up, Mike, like you and I have. You know, the first company I started, I do cold calling, right? I had to do the customer service software. I had to do everything. Every dollar I made came from my hard work. They just have VCs here, Mike. They have people who give them friends, who give them customers. They don't have to do. And that's what we live in. So it's this one world where people are actually doing work and another world of the swarm where they act like they're doing work. And the wealth that they make, Mike, is wealth circulating among themselves, which is being extracted from the large majority of people.
Yeah. And they're printing money and then granting it out to the companies that the government supports. And that money printing steals from all the rest of us. Now, Dr. Shiva, we're almost out of time, which is painful for me to say because I'm really enjoying this discussion. But we only have a couple of minutes left here. I want to give you an opportunity to wrap this up and whatever you want to say to people, you know, about your website and your campaign as well.
The main thing I want to let everyone know, Mike, is they create problems. They create sometimes fake problems. Most of the problems I create aren't even real problems. My entire life has been about delivering solutions, Mike, solving problems. And the issue that my entire existence, our campaign, everything we do with truthfreedomhealth.com, you can go there, Shiva, numeral4president.com, is about delivering solutions to win truth, freedom, health. One curve, which I've shared with you before, Mike, if you look at that curve again, this is their performance, okay? This red line is a life expectancy of Americans, okay? It's going downward. It's been going downward since, you know, the curve started really 1980. So if you are just a pure objective person and you're a hardworking person, what you realize is everything they've done is to create problems for you. They never even solve problems. They create fake problems, fake solutions, which create more problems. And my history has been actually solving problems, Mike, on the minutia plus large scale. People know in 2020, I was the one who recommended broadly taking vitamin D3, you know, quercetin, zinc, didn't bottle it. We saved hundreds of millions of people's lives. We're the ones who expose the fact that the election systems in this country are completely decadent. Elections are selections, and what you need to do to fix it. So the fundamental issue is, do people in this country finally want one of us who wants to solve problems, Mike? And if they do, guess what? It's here. It's never been here for a long time. People can go to shivaforpresident.com. People can go to truthfreedomhealth.com. We provide the knowledge and the learnings. And by the way, Mike, the big thing we want is, the biggest defiant thing people can do right now is, we must get on the ballot in every state. We've done it before. So if you're listening, volunteer, volunteer, volunteer. Go to shivaforpresident.com. And if you want to give money, great. But when you give us money, I give you back many, many different types of tools to learn. You know, what is a system? We give you back books and knowledge and courses, because in my view, I don't want to take anything for nothing, Mike. So that's what this campaign's about. It's about delivering solutions. They create problems, Mike. We create solutions.
Well, well said. And I really want to contribute to the effort to get you on the debate stage, because it's no competition. If you get on the debate stage, you're going to educate America in a way that will be mind-blowing.
Yeah. So, Mike, thank you for your support to yourself. Everyone, support us by helping us get on the ballot. Let everyone know. If people want to donate $1, $5, they can. But when you donate, by the way, you get tools from us, educational tools, Mike. That's what we give them, because we want people to raise their consciousness to understand how to think again, Mike, and how to have these core values of pushing their kids to work hard. And have discipline and all these very, very important things. That's what truly made America one of the most successful and wealthy nations on the planet.
Last question. I got to hit you with this. Would you accept Nikki Haley as your vice president?
Okay. No, I wouldn't even let her around my dog.
All right. Well said. Best quote of the show. Dr. Shiva, right. It's always a pleasure speaking with you. Thank you for your time today.
Okay. Thanks, Mike. Be well. Be the
all right.
Light. Thank you.
Take care. Again, shivaforpresident.com, folks. And that's the numeral four. So shivaforpresident.com is where you can find out more about Dr. Shiva and help support his efforts. If you want to volunteer or donate, both of those can be useful. And thank you for watching today. And thank you for supporting this free speech network, Brighteon.com. I'm Mike Adams, the founder of Brighteon. And yeah, I worked hard to build this. No one gave me any money to build this platform. We did it with your support and our hard work year after year after year. And that's why we're here. So thank you for your support. And we're here for you no matter what happens with this election. God bless you all. God bless America. Take care. Today's program is brought to you by Goldbacks. And you can go to my website, verifiedgoldbacks.com, in order to see all our lab testing results of these really innovative bills that have physical gold embedded in them. I've got a little stack of them in my hands here. These are the one goldbacks. Each of these contains quite literally 1/1000th of a troy ounce of gold inside the bill. The gold is actually in there. And there are other denominations, 5s, 10s, 25s, and 50s. The 50, of course, contains 50 1/1000ths of an ounce of gold. And I didn't even believe that at first. And so I acquired a bunch of these and I did the testing. If you go to my website, verifiedgoldbacks.com, you can see the laboratory testing that we did. And here I am. I bought a kiln. I did the meltdowns. We used acid also, you know, nitric acid here, did a dissolving into a mass spec analysis in my laboratory. Here's some of the melted gold that came out of the kiln test, and here's some of the weights and so on. On this website, you can see, let me scroll down, you can see the actual recoveries There's some of the gold foil that comes out in the first melting. There's the picture of the kiln. And there's some, well, different photos of the dust and everything that comes out. Bottom line is in this chart right here. The recovery that we got, the amount of gold that we got out of these bills, it was over 100% of the claimed amount in every single case. The lowest we got was 102%. The highest we got was 107%. And then we did ICP-MS testing here. And these are the results we got showing that it is better than 99.99% atomic gold, which makes it better than 24 karat gold. So bottom line, not only are the gold backs real, not only do they contain the gold that they claim to contain, and it's pure gold or, you know, 24 karat plus in purity, but they're highly divisible. So I can take these and I can, you know, I can give somebody or I can pay for something with 1/1000th of an ounce of gold, which I can't do that with a coin. Like here I have silver coins, but I can't take like a pair of scissors and cut off 1/1000th of an ounce of silver or gold. It just doesn't work that way. And I would ruin the coin. So gold backs make gold really usable, divisible, and it works in an off-grid situation. Power grid goes down, you may not have access to your crypto. You certainly won't have access to your bank account in that grid down scenario. These work. These work, and the gold is instantly visible. Gold backs are becoming increasingly recognizable, and people love the way they look, and they love to hold on to these, and more people are willing to take them, even as merchants, for purchases. So go to verifiedgoldbacks.com to learn about these. This is an affiliate site. We do earn a small commission on the sales of these at no additional cost to you. So it does help support this platform, but you'll get these in your hands. Now you might ask, well, what's the price of these compared to the price of actual gold? Okay, it is cheaper to buy raw gold by itself per ounce if you just want a gold coin or a gold bar. This has a premium over the price of gold because of the format and the divisibility and the precision and the printing technology and all of that. But it also means these have value over gold as they are accepted and recognized by merchants. So if you just want raw gold, you know, get gold coins. But how are you going to divide them up? How are you going to really use them in day-to-day transactions? If you want usable gold, gold backs are a great solution for that. And I think these can be part of every person's preparedness. If you already have gold and silver, maybe you already have garden seeds, maybe you already have other assets, but do you have gold backs yet? This is something important to add. And they also make really incredible, highly educational gifts. I've been tipping waiters and waitresses at restaurants with this, and then I have a little conversation with them about real money. Like, this is real gold, you know, versus fiat currency. And you can give them as gifts to family members, you know, birthdays and holidays and whatever else. And you can teach children or grandchildren about what is real money. And they will hold on to these because the artwork is amazing. They're beautiful. People will hold on to these and they'll see the value rise as the value of gold rises because these contain physical gold. As gold goes up, gold backs go up versus the dollar that's going down. And who knows in how many years, you know, what these will be worth versus the increasingly collapsing dollar. So I don't encourage speculation, just to be clear. I'm not saying speculate in it, but just to hold on to value that you have right now, just to kind of freeze, you know, your savings. I don't trust that the dollar is going to be here 10 years down the road. I know the dollar is not going to hold its own value, but I have absolute certainty that gold is going to continue to hold value. And as dollars drop, that means the price of gold in dollars will be rising, even if gold itself is still worth the same in terms of purchasing power. But in dollar denominations, gold will appear to be going up in terms of dollars. So that's something to keep in mind. Now, do your own research. I'm not your financial advisor, obviously. Do your own research. Get your own experts. Do what's right for you. Only you know your financial situation and your risk and so on. And could these go down in value? Well, if gold goes down, these will go down in value. If you think gold's going to go down over the next 10 years, then, you know, maybe you can buy Apple stock or something. I don't know. But if you think gold's going to go up or hold its own, then this is a great way to have physical gold in a usable form. So check it out at verifiedgoldbacks.com. And thank you for supporting us also. But more importantly, you know, thank you for protecting your own assets. We're going into some very interesting times in the years ahead. Thanks for watching. I'm Mike Adams for Brighteon.com. Take care.